This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. In many ways, La Crosse is known for its history, from celebrating the town's German heritage during Oktoberfest to the many historical homes and buildings dating back to the 1800s. The city is dotted with landmarks, but some feel the city's tributes to its earliest inhabitants, Native Americans, are outdated and disrespectful. A group of UWL students worked to create a video last semester that examines how these symbols contribute to misinformation about Native Americans today.
Problems that are associated with it is it kind of locks people into a certain identity, and it locks people into a certain place and time as well. And when you stereotype somebody, especially with imagery, in a sense dehumanizes them. They are no longer people, they are simply the image.
Joining us today to talk about the video patterns and problems with local imagery of Native Americans are Daniel Green, UWL lecturer and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, Ginny Van Order, co-chair of UWL's Native American Students Association, and Kaylin Bell, a student producer of the video patterns. Thank you all so much for being here today. And I want to go back to the quote we just heard from the video patterns that talks about, you know, the inaccurate representation of Native Americans, you know, how that's contributed to this continued stereotype. Daniel, do you feel like, you know, this is a good description of kind of the issues that media representation create for today's tribal members?
Yes. And not near elaborate enough that it's encompassing all of our, not just American lives. We find the same imagery worldwide. I found it in Korea and in Europe. It's all the same. It's all in the past, one-dimensional, no agency. It's very confining.
Yeah, and you mentioned in the past, and the quote also kind of echoes this idea that, you know, it really locks Native Americans into a certain time period. And Jenny, as you know, a member of the student association here, do you feel like this is a challenge for young Native Americans?
I do feel like it is another thing, kind of, because we're not represented it like accurately in media today. When you tell people you're Native American, it's, oh, well, you don't look Native American. Well, this is what Native Americans look like today. We range from dark skin to really light skin. We wear modern clothing, and people just don't see that. So a lot of, like, being part of NASA is constantly educating the community. There's actually an incident on campus at the beginning of the semester where we were tabling for something, myself and a few other members of NASA, and another group next to us actually said, how can you have a Native American student association run by a bunch of white people? And everyone who was sitting there was Native. So it's just kind of this, like, constant stereotype that we have to be breaking, that we're all walking around with, like, feathers in our hair and long dark hair and dark skin, and, like, nobody really knows what modern Native Americans look like today.
And I want to take a step back and talk a little bit about the video we're kind of using as a jumping off point. And so, you know, Kaylin, can you talk a little bit about why your group wanted to create this video?
Yeah, there are a group, four of us, four students, were taking an ethnic and racial studies capstone, and we really wanted to tackle this issue because we thought it was really pertinent to our local community, considering some of the conversations we've had regarding the Hiawatha statue that's in downtown La Crosse, and just the conversations that were occurring on campus and in the community. And I thought that we really had a good opportunity to bring some information to the community that was much needed and to spark a conversation. And I think we were really inspired by that. And we really wanted to do a good job because I think that it was really important and vital that it happened and that it was no longer being ignored.
Mm-hmm. And have you gotten community response? Have you gotten that engagement you were hoping to get?
Yes, to a certain degree. I think that the engagement has largely come from some of the educational institutions. Even here at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, I think that there's been an adoption of that film in a lot of the courses that tackle some of these issues. And even, I mean, I even heard that there was an art course that showed the video because the art professor just really, really liked the video and wanted the students to see it. So I think that's been really awesome to see. And even the school district here in town has wanted to adopt a portion of the video to show to elementary, middle, and high school students. So that's really kind of what we wanted. We wanted a little bit more exposure so that even, you know, K through 12 college students could really see that and they could have a conversation along those lines.
And Daniel, as a member of Wisconsin Tribe, you know, why do you think it's important to have these conversations and to bring up these issues that, you know, like in the video patterns?
Simplified, what goes through a person's mind comes out in the form of attitude and behavior. People vote on Wisconsin Indian casinos, and that vote has always been negative. So I can't help but question what input is going in to produce that kind of output. And I think imagery has a big, not just imagery, but the lack of information in general. Before I go on, congratulations. That was a good piece of work, and I've heard nothing but positive feedback.
Yeah, and Kaylin, you bring up one of the main topics in the video, which is the Hiawatha statue in Riverside Park, which I think is accurate to say it's one of the most controversial landmarks in La Crosse, built in 1961. It's also known as the Big Indian. And, you know, what are the problems with the statue that make it not a great tribute to Native Americans in this community?
Well, it's inauthentic. It's named Hiawatha. I'm not sure where that is. It's not Ho-Chunk. The worst is that it reinforces stereotypes. It's divided the people. That's the sign of an unsuccessful symbol. It divides. It doesn't unite. And then the Native Americans are called upon to be experts when they are not. They can be, but they're not. And just being Native American does not make one an expert. And so the Ho-Chunk Nation is being called upon and being asked for large sums of money to either demolish or to modify. I'm for modifying. Why not use what was once continues to be a harmful situation, psychologically harmful situation, into a positive one. Let's put a Green Bay Packers shirt on that statue. Let's put some sunglasses on it. Maybe some Levi's. The braids can stay. We want it still to be known as a Native American, but dressed in Fruit of the Looms would be a better idea.
Mm-hmm. And Jenny, you know, another issue that's brought up with this statue is that it is kind of clumps all Native American tribes into a single image and doesn't, you know, like Daniel said, it doesn't represent the Ho-Chunk people that are from this region, and it's just kind of this generic stereotype. I mean, is that something that is pretty common with how Native Americans are represented?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like people always think, oh, well, you're Native American. They just clump us all together when there's hundreds of tribes just in the United States. And we all have different languages, different cultures, different traditions. And I just think that the Hiawatha statue in particular, like, uses colors in the dress from, like, the Lakota tribes. The Lakota aren't in this region. Like, if we're going to have that statue there, it needs to be symbolic and representative of Ho-Chunks. And more modern, definitely, because it's just perpetuating that stereotype that Native Americans are part of the past when we're very much still here.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about problems with how Native Americans are represented in La Crosse. We're here with Daniel Green, UWL lecturer, Jenny Van Order, co-chair of UWL's Native American Student Association, and Kaylin Bell, a student producer of the video Patterns. And we're talking about the Hiawatha statue in Riverside Park. And, you know, in the video, there's some public reaction to the statue, with some people calling it historical and a good use of culture, while others found it offensive and outdated. Kaylin, as a producer of the video, were you surprised by some of the reactions you got from community members?
Absolutely not, actually. I really thought that piece at the beginning of the documentary was an important piece to show, to kind of highlight how the community is consuming such an image and how the community can consume images like that Hiawatha statue. And I think Daniel brought up a good point about how symbolism, a symbol should unite instead of divide. And I think that's really one of the main issues. And also talking about how we allow for indigenous tribes and for the Ho-Chunk Nation to be able to represent themselves and be able to speak for themselves on their own behalf. I think a lot of where that divide comes from is that there are groups of people who want to speak for other groups of people and want to continue to marginalize and push out those voices. And when the community consumes those images, they're not taking into account who created that image. They're not taking into account the actual historical facts, the historical perspective. And I think it was really telling to see how people were looking at it and how they were breaking it down. And I think hopefully it allowed a lot of the viewers to say, well, when I see something like that, how do I see it? What do I think of? And I really thought, I wasn't really surprised at all, actually.
And Daniel, I don't know if you're familiar with some of the reactions but from the video, but are you surprised by some of the words and choices of words that people use to describe the statue?
No, not surprised, pleased. A pattern I've found over the decades is that work that needs to be done very often comes from those that are, how do I say this? If it's an African-American issue, it's often the amelioration is going to come from African-Americans. So the work has been done, needed work. And so there are those educators out there that said, in essence, thank you for doing the work.
And Jenny, are you from this area? I didn't get to ask you before the program.
I'm actually from Minocqua, Wisconsin, so way up north.
And so the first time that you came to La Crosse and saw the statue for the first time, I don't know if you can remember that moment, but what did you think of?
I remember I was actually a lot younger. It was before I came to college. I think I was in eighth grade, like the first time I ever came to La Crosse. And I remember being in Riverside Park and I saw that and I was like, well, that's kind of weird. So I walked closer and read about it. And not being Ho-Chunk, you know, I guess I just didn't really know that much about Ho-Chunk history and culture. I thought it was weird in general that it was there, but the more research I put into it, it just, the more and more I learn about it, the more I think it's not appropriate at all.
And do you feel like that's a common reaction for people when they learn more about the statue and the issues with it?
I feel like people of color, yes, and a lot of white allies, but some people, when you try to tell them more and more about it, they just default back to that, oh, well, it's part of La Crosse's history, when really it's not symbolic of any of La Crosse's history at all, since Hiawatha wasn't Ho-Chunk. Any of that, so yeah.
And Daniel, this, you know, Jenny brings up an interesting point. Do you feel like a lot of these issues are you know, a lack of education around Native American issues, or do you think maybe it's people being uncaring of the stereotyping that's going on?
There are plenty of issues, and you hit some of the more important ones. Walk into any classroom at any age, adult or younger, and ask them for their extent of Native American knowledge. What you'll get is maybe, if you're lucky, a half a dozen famous names, mostly of chiefs, Squanto, maybe Sacagawea, and then that's it for the knowledge. We don't know what nation they're from, if they were married, did they have children, etc. We have no information, and that's cross-cultural. We can do the same thing with women's issues, etc. Name some famous women. We just can't do it. That there's a paucity of any real empowering information curriculum out there.
And so, you know, we're talking about the Hiawatha statue, and you know, many people have said it's kind of a tribute, and like Jenny said, it's part of La Crosse's history. But, you know, others have said that, you know, a change needs to be made to kind of address La Crosse's future. And Kaylin, I don't know if in your research around the statue, do you feel like the conversations that have been happening in recent years, do you feel like people are really thinking about how the statue plays into the future of lacrosse?
That's a good question. And I think that a lot of people are really caught up in holding on to what they've already known, that they've always known. And I think it can be somewhat troubling, and I think it can be frightening for people because there's a level of comfort there where they can somehow identify with, in this case, the indigenous imagery that they've grown up with. We had a person in the documentary said, you know, when I was 5, 6 years old, I saw this statue being built, and that's just a part of who I am. That's a part of how I grew up. And looking forward, you know, I think there are, you know, there's a generation growing up who really needs to be empowered through an education that's truthful, that really gets down to the issues that we face today and tomorrow. And I think that perhaps not many people who are holding on to that are really thinking about what does this mean for the future generation, what does it mean for my kids' kids. But that is an important point that you make, because I really value that being in an educational setting where we can actually expose people to this knowledge that I think that we've been lacking for such a long time. That way we can really honor and respect each other's cultures, and that we can really work and collaborate and work towards true justice, especially in education.
And so, you know, while most communities probably don't have a 20-foot-tall statue, I'm sure there are other places that outdated representations and outdated tributes of Native Americans exist. Daniel, how common is this issue?
My first thought was that those statues are not uncommon. You'll find them at miniature golf places all over, only they're white. Same stuff, same material, same height, only it's a white guy in a sports cap with a putter. So I don't understand the art. We call it the Colossus of Kitsch. Maybe it was art at one time, but it is no longer. Now I've forgotten your question.
Well, just how common is the problem of having something like a statue or just a mural, anything that represents this outdated, this inaccurate representation of Native Americans?
Well, as stated earlier, it's ubiquitous. It seems to be worldwide that this is how people view Native Americans, and then it's in our textbooks, et cetera, et cetera. Certainly in our movies, our literature, and then it becomes accepted as common knowledge. That it's accepted as knowledge at all is not a good practice.
That's Daniel Green, a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, here with us today to talk about the continued misrepresentation of Native Americans throughout Wisconsin. Also joining our conversation is Ginny Van Order, co-chair of UWL's Native American Student Association, and Kaylin Bell, a student producer of the video Patterns. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And so, you know, we've been talking a lot about this statue, but I think this issue exists in a lot of different forms in advertising, companies that use these symbols in sports mascots. I mean, you know, you kind of see this imagery throughout different issues. And, you know, Ginny, when it's put into the context of a label or a sports mascot, you know, are people as quick to point out the inaccuracies?
I think Native people definitely are. Other people are really quick, again, to just defend it. This is us honoring them. That's what you hear a lot with the mascot. We're just trying to honor, specifically with the Redskins. Never would you use the word redskin to honor a Native American. That's a derogatory term. So I don't even know how this is even still a question and still up for debate. It's not okay.
And Daniel, I think over the years, you know, we've seen some teams pull mascots. You know, UWL, for example, used to be the Indians and now the Eagles. But obviously there are still teams that still hold on to those images. Do you feel like progress has been made?
Oh, yes. In 1970, there were 3,200 such mascots in high school and college. Today, that number's approaching 700. So people, many people are getting the message. On the issue of honor, I'd like to for the listener to think about intentions do not determine consequences. Knowing the history of the mascots, I know it was never about honor. It was a perpetration of Native Americans as less than human. So they make a better, ferocious team mascot. But even if it was, for just a little bit, if it was about honoring Native Americans, what people need to accept is that, okay, the intention was good, but that was not the result.
And so I want to play a clip from the video that I think represents another issue for Native Americans.
We're seen as invisible people. People don't think that we're still here, and people don't understand that, like, a Native American can just be walking down the street in jeans and a t-shirt, just like any other person. I think people associate Native Americans with, like, traditional clothing and music, and if they're not seeing that, they don't think of Natives.
Well, I think one thing they need to recognize is that we are here. There are American Indians in the city, and that we are here as American Indians. 21st century American Indians are still tribal people. And we respond and think of ourselves as tribal people. And they need to stop trying to put us onto cave walls.
The first half of that clip was from another leader of the Native American Student Association. And so, Jenny, I mean, can you relate to that feeling of you know, your identity as a Native American being kind of invisible?
Definitely. I think most people feel that, and I definitely have felt it throughout my life just because I am, you know, light-skinned, light-eyed. People see me. If I say I'm Native American, it's, well, you don't look Native, you're too white, that kind of thing. So I'm too white to be Native, but my culture is too Native to be white. So for a long time, I just felt like I didn't really fit anywhere. Yeah. And I feel like that's true for a lot of Native Americans today.
And Daniel, why is it important that, you know, people don't make assumptions about Native Americans based on, you know, how they look, or and, you know, why is it important that we are more respectful of how they identify culturally?
Well, I think you hit on the word respect. You know, allow some agency, some self-determination. let us tell the university what's important to Native American people, not the opposite.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like those conversations go on?
Not enough. Yes, they happen. The image that we've been talking about, the pigeonholing, greatly affects one's sense of identity and thereby their psychological health. We definitely need more agency there.
And Jenny, you know, how does the Native American Student Association here on campus kind of work to combat these issues of invisibility?
Just making our presence known on campus, I think, helps a lot. We definitely have a strong network through the Office of Multicultural Student Services. So really using our resources, and we try to hold events every semester, you know, for specifically with Indigenous speakers or Indigenous music, that kind of thing. And just constantly being there to educate people that we're still here, and yes, this is respectful, this is not okay, that sort of thing.
And do you feel like, you know, is there something that you wish your organization could do more with and had more, you know, agency, had more power to work on?
I guess just within, like, our school structure, our faculty, that kind of thing. Increasing the people of color that work on campus and being more receptive to our beliefs and our teachings when you're in the classroom, because a lot of people, when they present Native culture and Native history, they're presenting it from their perspective, and sometimes we just need that Indigenous perspective when we're learning about these kinds of things, because it's not going to be the same as maybe like a white person's perspective.
Janie Van Order, co-chair of UWL's Native American Student Association, is here with us today to talk about how outdated and inaccurate representation of Native Americans has affected local communities. Also joining us today is Daniel Green, UWL lecturer and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, and Kaylin Bell, a student producer of the video Patterns. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about Native American imagery in lacrosse. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find a link to the video Patterns that we talked about today. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the misrepresentation of Native Americans in popular media, art, and even in historical markers or monuments, and how these stereotypes affect tribal members today. Through a long-running controversy about the 20-foot-tall Hiawatha statue in Riverside Park, La Crosse is no stranger to problems with the way Native Americans are portrayed. One group of UWL students worked to address these issues in a video called Patterns, which explores the history of Native American stereotypes and their effects on the community. Joining us today to talk about the video and local Native American imagery are Daniel Green, UWL lecturer and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, Jenny Van Order, co-chair of UWL's Native American Student Association, and Kaylin Bell, a student producer of the video Patterns. And Daniel, obviously our country has a long history of misrepresenting tribal members. Do you feel like these images have changed throughout the years, or is this the same problem over and over again?
No, I don't think it's changed, not the images. Not much. Our information hasn't changed much at all. It's not even a back burner. The most powerless group in the United States, the message seems to be who cares?
Mm-hmm. And I want to go back to the Patterns video to introduce another idea that I think is important to talk about.
Does a group have the power to control the presentation of their own image or their own representations in the media? Because the history of both the federal and state governments' interactions with American Indians is that it's always whites that are in control. And people don't necessarily understand that even in this debate, if we are not listening to, if we are not consulting, if we are not paying attention to what indigenous folks are saying about these things, even if they're disagreeing amongst themselves, the danger is that then we're simply replicating the power dynamic.
And so, he's talking about the issue that he's talking about is the Hiawatha statue in downtown La Crosse. But, you know, broadly, Jenny, do you feel like Native Americans have the power to control their own image in media?
Unfortunately, no, because there are not very many Native Americans in media. And unfortunately, I feel like that's a big barrier for us, because how do you get more people in the spotlight who are Native, who can talk about Native issues? Our issues are constantly being debated amongst people who are not Native. And it's hard when you're trying to step into a role like that. And a lot of times when a Native tries to step into a role like that, they're constantly shot down.
And Daniel, do you feel like the issues in La Crosse with the Hiawatha statue. Do you feel like some of that's going on, of these issues being debated and the Ho-Chunk Nation not really having a voice in the debate?
We have a voice to a point in Wisconsin, because I think the Ho-Chunks are now the third largest employer in the state of Wisconsin. If I don't mean to reinforce stereotypes, but the casino, the bingo money, enabled attorneys to enforce the treaty rights that are very old. And this is a big part of the progress that Native America has made. On a national level, in the debate, as the conversation was proceeding, I couldn't help but think of Katy Perry, Paris Hilton, Pharrell, Andre 3000, the list goes on and on of these celebrities who dress up like Native Americans. And to my knowledge, the only one who's apologized has been Pharrell. All the rest say that they don't owe an apology.
And I think that the issue of dressing up like Native Americans, I mean, you see that every Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
How do you combat that? How do you fix that issue?
Sometimes just being there. 2 years ago on this corner Quick Trip here, I stood behind three, I assume, college students, and one was dressed like a Native American. I didn't say anything, and I stood there, and just by chance, she turned around quickly. She had forgotten something. She saw me, and she immediately, her head slunk down, and she says, "Oh, God," she says, "I'm sorry." And I started laughing. I thought, if you knew, why did you do it? It's a lack of power. It's a lack of information.
Jenny, do you feel like that this issue of kind of dressing up like Native Americans and putting on this, this culture that doesn't belong to them, is this an issue you see at UWL?
Definitely. Every single Halloween, there's somebody. And if, I do say something, I always say it completely, like, respectfully, not being mean. But then I get the, well, oh, no, I didn't mean it to be hurtful or anything. Well, it doesn't matter what you meant it to be. It still is not okay. And even outside of that, dressing up like an Indian princess or a chief or whatever, feel like a lot of our apparel, like traditional apparel, traditional like jewelry, that kind of stuff is being appropriated into many chain stores nowadays. I was at a store in Onalaska the other day and I saw something that looks like a medicine pouch, and that's just not okay with me that people are wearing that kind of stuff, because you're appropriating our culture, and at the same time those kinds of things are sacred to us and you're just making them like a frivolous everyday thing to wear. So that kind of stuff definitely I see everywhere today in culture.
And, for someone who doesn't understand why that's not okay to dress up like a chief or whatever every Halloween, can you explain that to someone who maybe doesn't get it?
For starters, it's different if you're dressing up as like a costume of a specific person or something, but you're just generalizing that this is what Native Americans are like, and we're still here today. So I feel like it's not okay to dress up as us. Like, I wouldn't dress up as like a black person for Halloween. Like, that's just not okay. And on top of that, it's further like perpetuating the idea that like we aren't here anymore. And just bringing up that point again that like we're the invisible people of our country. Because people continue to do these things even though we say they're not okay. And specifically, if two Native Americans are sitting here saying it's not okay, like, how can you even argue with that?
And Kaylin, as someone who has studied ethnic and racial studies, did you get into and talk about, issues with appropriation and how that's disrespectful?
Yeah, that's conversations that I've certainly had, even within my classes, even outside of the class. And I think really that whole issue with appropriation in regards to, indigenous people is this oversaturation of these caricatures in the media where we only see the images and we don't see enough Native Americans actually representing themselves as they are today. It seems to be this imbalance. And I think when we do see people dressed up as Native American for Halloween or whatever, I think that's a direct result of them never really realizing that there is a human element, that these are human beings, instead of seeing the caricature, instead of seeing the Cleveland Indians or the Chicago Blackhawks in the media. I think that is has a large part in why we continue to see some of that appropriation.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about problems with how Native Americans are represented in La Crosse. We're here with Daniel Green, UWL lecturer and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, Jenny Van Order, co-chair of UWL's Native American Student Association and part Ojibwe, and Kaylin Bell, a student producer of the video Patterns. And Kaylin, as someone who's not Native American, you know, do you feel like this issue was something you knew about before taking on this video as a project?
No, and I was actually thinking earlier when Daniel was making comments about education and the Native Americans that we do know in history. I'm thinking about my own education, and, you know, I couldn't recall a time where we really, you know, were taught, you know, our history. And I think about Mount Rushmore, and we have, you know, the faces of our presidents in history, and to replace those faces, you know, with Native American leaders, you know. And I think, you know, when I look at an image where they did replace with Native American leaders, I had a hard time naming who those people were. And I was, you know, had to harken back on how I was educated, what I was taught. And I think it speaks a lot for the people who, you know, were here first, you know, not to even be acknowledged, not to be respected to that degree, and to be just skipped over, it's terrible. And I think that my education is very similar to a lot of people. And I think that was why I think a video like this and these conversations are so necessary.
And Daniel, as a lecturer, as someone who works in education, you know, what changes do you want to see made to improve this problem or to remedy this problem?
I don't want the symptoms addressed. I want to go to the core of the problem, something substantial, something that's going to last and make change, is not something to be remembered and spewed upon a test and forgotten. There's plenty of fascinating, both contemporary and past, to be learned. The students don't understand that our exact form of democracy, Benjamin Franklin borrowed and reported in the Albany Plan. The amount of Native Americans that died. We're in definite denial of that. We don't want to deal with that because it happened right where we're living. So, yeah, the changes that I definitely want to see, but they would start at the top. They would start at the core.
And, Jenny, how often do you think these changes also need to be made among you know, community conversations rather than a conversation that happens in the classroom?
I think beginning in the classroom, it should definitely take place, having more education about Natives, about Native issues, Native history. If you have that basis, then when you are out in the community, you can have those educated conversations about this kind of stuff, because I feel like if you don't have that basis first, a lot of your notions and stuff aren't going to be accurate, aligned with like Native American culture and history and stuff. And I know specifically in Wisconsin we do have Act 31, which is supposed to like implement Native culture with the 11 recognized tribes in Wisconsin and stuff. And just the other day I was at a presentation about it, and they had everyone in the room raise their hands like, did you have this at least twice in your K-12 learning? And it was only me and one other person who had it. And it's just because I grew up by a reservation. So I think if you can really start implementing those types of things in a way that is memorable and not just skimming the surface, then the community will be more receptive and understanding to our issues.
And Kaylin, was there anything that you guys didn't get to address in the video that you really feel like needs to be kind of talked about?
That's a good question. I think all of it needs to be talked about more. And I think that was really the most difficult part about making the film, and understanding that this might be the first time that people are interacting with this information, and how troubling and how scary that is, and how there's so much potential weight to this information that we're carrying, and responsibility that we have for taking on the project, first of all, in our community, and being able to share accurate information that is all-encompassing of all the issues. And I think it's nearly impossible to do that in, 24-minute video? So I think the hardest part was not being able to go even deeper into some of these issues and talk about some of the deep-rooted ideologies that continue to perpetuate these images and why we think it's okay. So I don't think there was anything particular that we missed, but just, I mean, there are things that we did miss, but just getting deeper into the information that we were already presenting.
And Daniel, do you feel like there was something that, just didn't make it into the video that is also an important element to this conversation?
Oh, you've cut me to the quick. I haven't seen the video in a couple of months. Well, I thought it was very good, of course. You know, there's just so much because of the paucity that we have at the educational level. We really don't know squat, so... an entire series, a library, could be done on the issue.
Yeah. And how do you feel like Wisconsin sizes up to other states for their level of education they provide on Native American issues?
I haven't lived in another state in over 30 years. I'm going to assume that it's pretty much the same. We knew that Act 31 was getting lip service, that it was a mandate, and yet it wasn't being complied with. I'm pretty sure it's the same. The imagery is certainly the same everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And Jenny, do you feel like there are generational differences in how Native Americans, think about issues with imagery? Do you feel like Native Americans your age maybe think about the issue or want to approach the issue in a different way than has been approached in the past?
I think there is. There's definitely, when you're younger, when you're the youth, at home, one of my brother's friends was wearing a Redskins hat, and he's like, a lot of Ojibwe. So it was just weird, when you're that young, not quite understanding yet why it's not okay. And I think today a lot more of the people my age who are Native are starting to step into that role of, okay, like now we need to be activists for ourselves because no one else is doing it. Like we need to combat these mascot issues, all that sort of stuff, because we want to make it easier for our youth and the generations to come, which I think is a philosophy with a lot of Native American tribes, is putting our heads together to figure out what we can do for the future children.
And so you feel like a lot of the things that we've seen in the past few years, just very recently with kind of standing up and talking about these issues of race and social inequality, that those things are happening also among Native Americans?
Definitely, maybe not as much as it could be, but I think we're definitely trying to find our voices so we can stand up for ourselves in a society today where, unfortunately, we're still not heard as much as we should be.
Mm-hmm. And Danielle, do you feel like there are generational differences in this issue that younger generations are approaching things differently than you did, and or they're missing something that you guys, really were thinking about and approaching?
Yes, there's been progress. I would like it to be even better, but the resources are better. Certainly social media, the internet, et cetera, gives us advantages over past generations. The past generation may be excused for the abuses, the oppression that they put up with. My mother went to the boarding schools as a child. She went to a regular high school, but she still got the beatings and the abuse at the hand of those administrators and teachers. The remarkable poverty, et cetera, is being dented, seriously dented, certainly not for all, but there's progress there. So things are improving. My concern is that, as I mentioned earlier, it's still seen as a Native American issue. You want something done, then do it. Well, this is going to take all of us to change the curriculum, to change the imagery, et cetera. And I'd like to, if I may, an addendum in thinking about your former question about other states. There are some very positive things. Minneapolis is because they have such a high Native American population, they're making excellent strides, Seattle, et cetera, getting rid of Columbus Day and turning it into Indigenous Peoples Day. So there is progress being made that vacillates across the country.
That's Daniel Green, UWL lecturer and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, here with us today to talk about the continued misrepresentation of Native Americans throughout Wisconsin. Also joining our conversation is Ginny Van Order, co-chair of UWL's Native American Student Association, and Kaylin Bell, a student producer of the video Patterns. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Ginny, before we got started, I know that you were talking about something that the Native American Student Association here has kind of been working on to maybe help with some of this recognition of Native people. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you guys are working on?
Yeah, definitely. So along with JMAC on campus, that's Joint Multicultural Affairs Committee, we formulated a resolution to bring in front of Senate. So it's called the Indigenous Land Recognition Policy. And basically, it's just a simple two-sentence statement recognizing that our school and this whole area is on what's considered traditional Ho-Chunk land. So just really the statement's about recognizing that and honoring that. At the end of the statement, we also include, like, please take this time to recognize the land of the Ho-Chunk people and the sacred lands of all Indigenous people. So we really just wanted this statement to be read at. We have specific events and stuff on campus, sporting events, that kind of thing, just to further educate and recognize and continually honor this. Because as one person stated, they said, well, maybe this should just be something that is read 2 days a year or something, 2 times a year, something like that. But the fact of the matter is we're Native American every single day of the year. This is Ho-Chunk land every single day of the year. So for us, that just wasn't enough. Other people shot it down maybe in honor of getting a plaque. That's too easy to walk by. How many people really read those sorts of things? And we just think that this statement is something that our school could be really proud of. Again, there's no negative connotations with this statement, so why can't we just take 2 sentences, 7 seconds at the beginning of events to honor this land and the people who were here and continue to be here?
And Daniel, why is taking that time out important? Why is that an important thing for UWL and for the community to do?
Out of sight, out of mind. Sure. again, what goes through people's minds, and if we are what we eat, the diet that we've been eating has been rather negative. Why wouldn't the output be negative? I think back into La Crosse years ago. We've had 3 casino referendums. 2 of them were Native American referendums, and 1 was a non-Indian referendum. Guess which one won? And 2 of them, the other 2 lost in this county. Does that answer your question? I think I got a little off there.
Well, just, the idea of for the larger community to kind of, be exposed to the idea that, this is Ho-Chunk land and those are the the original people of this area. You know, why is that, I guess, important for Native Americans today?
I think all three of us have addressed the issue of substance over superficiality. I like the idea of putting a Packer shirt on the Colossus of Kitsch. We're still here. We're still Native Americans, but we also go to games. We play football.
We've been talking with Daniel Green, UWL lecturer and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, Jenny Van Order, co-chair of UWL's Native American Student Association, and Kaylin Bell, a student producer of the video Patterns, about problems with the representation of Native Americans in La Crosse. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find a link to the video Patterns that we talked about today. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.